From JMI Wealth, brand new week, Monday morning. Andrew Kelleher, good morning to you.
Yeah, morning, Mike.
Now, talk to me about the RB, and I was reading a bit about this in Adrian Orr over the weekend, and the bank capital requirements. So this, in a nutshell, is the robustness of the banks and what they have to carry and what they have to have on their books, etc., right?
Yeah, that's dead right. And I think this one sort of, the Reserve Bank Deputy Governor, Jeff Baskand, spoke to reporters on Friday, and it sort of went under the radar a little bit. And this is to do with the Reserve Bank's proposals to increase bank capital requirements. Now, it's been a bit of a long-running story, but very much sort of in the background, I suppose, not really front and centre. But the professional market has been sort of concerned, I suppose, for some time about the potential impact of these changes. Now, one of the main concerns has been the real potential for the proposed changes to actually put upward pressure on mortgage rates. So at the same time that we're thinking, you know, interest rates are lower for longer and the Reserve Bank said they're not going to move the official cash rate, you potentially have an environment where the official cash rate stays the same, but your mortgage rates are actually going to go up. Now, the Deputy Governor actually confirmed some of those concerns in saying that these changes could raise borrowing costs and ultimately lead to tighter monetary policy. So, and I think the most interesting part of his admission there is that this could actually require a cut to the official cash rate. And in the sense, he admitted, if the economy was undershooting inflation or undershooting maximum sustainable employment, that could be offset with a change in the official cash rate. Now, the issue here, Mike, is that the Reserve Bank believes that now is the time to address capital issues before there's any actual requirement for it. But, Mike, these changes are substantial. I mean, so banks have capital, right? And how much capital they have is a function of, or how much they can lend is a function of how much capital they've got. Mm. And so if you increase the amount of capital, they can't do as much lending. And what happens then? They make less profit. So to maintain the level of profit that they're currently getting, they would have to make a change somewhere else. And the only change they can make is to increase the rates that you or I pay on our mortgage. Now, the banks currently have masses of Tier 1 capital, really, compared to the limit at the moment. I think they've got about 12 to 14%. Now, that would need to be over 16%, but they always carry a buffer. But, Mike, you're talking about potentially up to $20 billion worth of new equity that would have to go into the banks, into the top four banks. So this is substantial, and we're going to see this play out over it. I mean, it's a slow burn. It comes in over 5 years, but pretty substantial.
But here's my question. Call me a simpleton, but yep. of all the yep. bank trouble we've seen in the world since 2008, this country hasn't been part of that equation. We have very robust, healthy, and profitable banks.
Yeah, I mean, the core banking sector, of course, we had the finance company issues, that was not the registered bank sector. No. And Australia and New Zealand have both got very strong, robust banking sector. The thing is, the Reserve Bank governor believes that we could be more robust.
Okay. China looks all right with the US at the moment. There's a bit of light there, isn't there?
Yeah, there is a bit of light there. So these ongoing negotiations, but the context that I want to talk about here, Mike, is that US equity markets or US share markets have rallied to the highest level we've seen them at since November 2018. They've rallied for 9 consecutive weeks. That's the longest number of consecutive weeks that the S&P 500 has certainly gone up in 24 years. So 2018, the end of that, we got the volatility, but the beginning of 2019 has just delivered good times, really, hasn't it, in the share market? So 26,828, that's the high in the Dow in early October, and we closed above 26,000 on Friday night. The S&P 500 is still about 5% below the peak, but one of the main reasons behind this bounce back is this progress that's being made towards a trade deal. Now, Trump has met with Vice Premier Liu, and there appears to be potential for that rapidly looming 1 March date when the tariffs go up to be extended. Robert Lighthizer, he's the US trade representative, he said that they've made progress on structural issues. Good. There are still some pretty major hurdles. We know China's committing to take more US imports, but there's this issue of monitoring, managing a proposed currency deal. Not sure if we can get through that. Just an aside, Mike, I'm a little bit worried. Apparently there's potential for a bit of strife between the US and Europe as well. So we get China out the way and there might be trade issues with Europe and particularly autos. So we've got to keep an eye on that.
We'll keep an eye on that. What are the numbers?
Yep. 26,031 was where the Dow Jones closed. They were up 181 on Friday night, 0.7%. S&P 500, 2792. They were up 18. And the NASDAQ up 68, closing at 7527. The FTSE 100, 7178. The Nikkei lost 38 points on Friday, closing at 21425. Shanghai Composite up almost 2%, closing at 2804. The ASX 200 up 28, 6167. That's about 0.5%. We had a small gain on Friday, up 8 points on the NZX 50, 9309. On the currencies, 0.6833 US, 0.9603 Aussie, 0.6035 Euro, quid, 0.5243, 75.73 yen, gold, $1,329, Brent crude, $67.12.
Great one, mate. See you tomorrow. Appreciate it. Andrew Kelleher, JMI Wealth, he and the team at JMIWealth.co.nz.